It's live expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Good morning, everybody. It is 11:06 here on the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, and we're starting with yours. We're going to talk about tax today, but a few housekeeping tips first. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. If you have a tax question for our experts, lines are wide open. We're going to get there in just a few minutes. There is lots to talk about. Believe it or not, the IRS is actually open for business this year. So we're going to take your questions and try to help you out as you rebuild your own house, one piece at a time. All right. On my YouTube channel, many of you may not even know that I have a YouTube channel, but I do. It's called Expert Real Estate Tips. We have 300 and almost 50 videos up, I think, and I just put up a whole bunch more. They're called Real Estate Minutes. The one that went up, actually, we had about three or four that went up on Friday, but one of them I think is pretty important. I spent a lot of time this week on Eric Erickson's show talking about it Tuesday, sequestration. It actually went into effect on Friday night at midnight. It looks like everybody's dug in their heels. We're going to just move forward. There are some really interesting statistics in the paper this weekend about how we're actually getting to somewhere close to $4 trillion in hammering away at the deficit between sequestration, which could account for a 700,000 job loss this year, folks, so keep that in mind. Rising tax revenues, and we're going to talk about how to get every last deduction you're entitled to in just a moment, but also just with what's going on in shaving back in the government, and the GAO thinks this could account for at least a half a point reduction in what's going on with the economy, and of course that would put us back into contraction territory. So all of those things to watch about. Next week we're going to pick up that thread again, and of course online. But if you want to see what we're talking about and how sequestration will impact housing and the housing market, go to my Expert Real Estate Tips channel. I've just tweeted it out on Twitter. If you're not following me on Twitter, you should be at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. And then go to thinklink.com and sign up for the free weekly newsletter. All kinds of really cool stuff coming your way at thinklink.com. All right, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. There's our number. Let me introduce our tax panel of experts. You've heard them before, Mary Brody. She's an enrolled agent and a partner at Tax Audit Guardian. Mary Brody at BrodyAccounting.com. We're going to tweet out her number and information a little bit later on, put it up on the blog for tomorrow morning. Bill Nemeth is an enrolled agent, also a partner at Tax Audit Guardian. W.G. Nemeth at AOL.com if you have questions. And Chet Burgess, an enrolled agent. Principal at Brookwood Tax Service. All of them enrolled agents, all of them members of the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. Find one near you at number 4, GAEA.org. Panel, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us.
So, we are, it's tax season, it's March, and here we are back again talking about the madness that is the IRS.
7 days a week.
7 days a week. I know, it's crazy, Chet. So, I know you guys are living this, and thank you so much for taking time out of what I'm sure is an increasingly, 24/7 workday in order to get all this tax stuff done. But there's so much going on, and I think everybody is just completely confused by it. Where shall we start today? Bill, you sent around a very long email with all kinds of interesting commentary on it. We're not doing 79 pages. I don't care what you say. But
oh, darn.
I know. But where do we start here?
We can start with something that nobody believes, and that is that Congress changed the tax laws for 2012 on the second day of 2013, which made tax planning for 2012 exceedingly difficult because we didn't know what the law was when we were telling people.
So how did they change the law? What are the biggest pieces?
The good news is people of modest to moderate income did just fine. All the extenders went through. Warren Buffett got his wish. He is going to be paying more taxes, and I'm sure he's happy, but he has a lot of other people in his income tax bracket that probably aren't happy. They did extend for another year the facility if a person loses their personal home through default or foreclosure. They will not have taxable income on their tax return for 2012 and 2013. That's very important as we try to struggle out of the housing mess.
Right. Well, that I think has been very important for all of my listeners. So many of you who are listening right now worried about getting those deals sort of closed down by the end of 2012. Don't need to be quite as concerned, although there's some future concern about 2014. Let me throw the number out there again, 404-872-0750. What are you seeing in terms of the biggest areas of confusion right now for your clients that are coming through the door with tax returns? You know, where are the pain points? Because I believe there's going to be a whole bunch of them this year.
Well, one of the problems has been delayed programming of IRS computers, and several of my clients have experienced delays. You know, they brought their information to me, and we've got the return filled out, and it's in my computer. It's ready to go, but there are one or more forms in the tax return that the IRS has not yet been ready to process because of the fact that the tax bill wasn't passed by Congress until New Year's Day and signed by the President until the 2nd. And the last big batch of those forms actually, supposedly, are going to be fileable as of today.
Which are the forms that you're referring to, Chet?
One of the big ones that caught a lot of people was the education credit form, the 8863, a lot of people with kids in college.
Yep.
And we just had to put their completed return on hold until the IRS started accepting that, a couple of weeks ago, I guess.
About Valentine's Day.
Yeah, that was a major one. And then the biggest one now is the passive activity loss form that's hit everybody who has a rental property. And as you know, there are a lot of unintentional landlords in the country right now.
And hedge funds who intend on being landlords as well.
But they couldn't sell the house, and they got a job transfer, and so they've turned it into a rental property. Well, you can't have a rental property without that passive form. So I've got three sitting on a stack at home. I hope maybe I can file this afternoon. The home energy credit form is the other one that was still on hold. And for businesses, a big one was the general business credits form 3800. Then there are several others that are applied to smaller groups of taxpayers. But supposedly, the good news is that last big batch of delayed processing forms supposedly will be fileable today. We'll all find out this afternoon.
Is everything still due April 15th? It is April 15th.
Yes,
this year, right?
Ma'am. Even though Congress and the President were slow and the IRS is slow, the taxpayers got no slack.
And then is that also for Superstorm Sandy and anybody who was affected by any of the East Coast weather nonsense this year?
Well, they did get extensions for estimated tax payments and payroll tax filings and other things. You know, those extensions are still good. And they still have the option, as you know, with the casualty loss, people in the disaster area have the option of either claiming their casualty loss on their 2012 tax return, or they can go back and file amendment to their 2011 and potentially get a faster refund.
Well, we know that refunds, just to sort of point this out, refunds seem to be slowing down this year. Is that what you guys are seeing as well in practice?
It's kind of a mixed bag. Because of the IRS fraud filters, low-income folks are seeing some delays, and other people that, you know, are kind of in the mainstream, everything is working just fine. The IRS has created a link to Where's My Refund. It's updated once a day, and immediately the IRS said it went down because everybody on their phone was hitting it every 5 minutes. So they keep stressing it's updated once a day. Don't contribute to excess traffic.
And wow. Well, so, good to know that they're...
And supposedly this year they will show you on Where's My Refund that your return has been received and is not yet processed. In prior years, that your returns that were delayed by fraud filters just kind of went into a dark hole somewhere.
And on the subject of fraud, that's still a growth industry. I'm seeing some letters from some of my folks that had fraud committed on their tax returns in prior years. They're now starting to get the letters saying, you owe us $10,000. Please pay it immediately because your tax return did not match the income reported under your social. So we get to play with those in our spare time.
And I've also noticed a problem with people that were issued the identity theft PIN.
What's going on with that? Because I know several people who have had that.
Well, this may be an isolated case, but my gentleman was issued his PIN not too very long ago. We filed his return, and usually you get an acceptance by the IRS within maybe 10 minutes now with the new modernized e-file. His has been pending now for almost 7 days, and it's not being accepted yet, so I don't know if that's indicative of all identity theft PIN returns or whether it's just him because it was issued recently, but it's something I'm watching.
All right, let's go to the phones. We've got a whole bunch of people online. If you've got tax questions for our experts, we are here trying to help you rebuild your house at 404-872-0750. Ross joins us on the line from Atlanta. Ross,
morning,
what's your tax question?
Sorry. Yes, ma'am. Good morning, Ms. Glink. How are you this morning to you and your panel?
Thank you. We're all doing great. What can we do for you?
Very good, very good. Bear with me because I'm kind of nervous. Let me see if I can muddle through this real quick. Basically, Ms. Glink, my 2008 taxes, I was maybe a couple of weeks late from the deadline of April 16th. when I did file the taxes, I told them that I had a hardship, the IRS that I had a hardship. They took a look at it and everything, and they let me back up. They released the taxes, even though I was a couple of years late, past the three years. They released the taxes. They, excuse me, ma'am, mailed me back. And I told them, mailed them that I had a hardship and I wasn't going to be able to pay it. So what they did was they squashed it, so to speak. Now they want the money back. I owe like maybe $1,500 worth of child support. They sent half of it to child support. They got half of the child support that they sent. They got it back. So they wanted the other monies back from me. Do I have a leg to stand on, basically?
It's a complicated question. Who wants to take that?
Let me try, because I deal a lot in this area. When you filed the 2008, you had a refund, and what I'm hearing you say is the Treasury Offset Program took half of your refund to apply to child support. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir. Yes.
Okay. And what is it you want to do now? Do you think that was done in error, or did you, in fact, think you had the liability and it was properly done?
Oh, actually, what I'm saying is what they did was they let the refund go, and they sent me a letter in the mail stating that it was late, the refund was late, I was past the 3 years, so they're going to have to take the refund back. So they took the offset from the child support back, and they wanted the $1,500 back from me that they sent me. They split it in half. They sent the child support $15 and sent me $1,500. Basically, that's what they did. And now they're saying that, again, they wanted the monies back. So they took the money back from the child support and went back to the IRS, and now they want my $1,500 back.
Yeah. Yeah, typically, you're a victim of that situation known as open years. When you file late, you can only be eligible for a refund for the last 3 years. 2008 is that fourth year kind of thing, and so they, in error, put $1,500 to your child support. Then somebody looked at the computer again and said, oh, gosh, that was a forfeited refund, pulled it back, and now they're looking to you to pay that money. And I think what you'll find is if you file your return today for 2012, they're probably going to offset any refund you have to try to gain back that $1,500.
So it's not going to escape, Ross. It's something that they feel that you owe, and if you feel like you don't owe it, then you're going to have to probably write a letter, right, Bill?
I have much better luck calling, because if you write a letter, it just seems to drag it out for 6 months, and the answer seems to be the same.
Right.
No.
All right. Ross, I hope that helps. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. We are rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with your tax house today here on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find Elise Glink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time. Let's start with yours here on News Talk WSB. It's time for Real Estate Insight with Rhonda Duffy of Duffy Realty of Atlanta. Rhonda, welcome back.
Thanks.
So what makes a good short sale listing agent?
Oh, my gosh.
You only have 2 minutes.
Yeah. The list is long. It's plentiful. You know, I think it takes a lot of experience. I'm the number one short sale agent in Georgia 2 years in a row, and I had a coach in the beginning, and he gave me his surmising. Of course, he was a coach. He didn't really do this himself, and it depends on what region you're in, what area, what standards are there. But I think it takes a lot of experience. I think it takes enough experience to know when the yacht has shifted course. You know, a lot of times with short sales, the lenders change what they're doing. They decide that they're going off in this direction, and so you have to alter your plans. And so, to me, a great short sale agent comes from experience.
So that's kind of interesting, because I feel the same way. You want somebody who's been around the block enough, who understands when lenders change their tune, and they're in touch enough with these lenders to really get where the market is going. So if you are buying and you want to use a short sale, get a short sale person, somebody who's really
right.
been around the block, you want somebody who has contacts across the board and really understands the process. If you're trying to sell your house and it is unfortunately a short sale, I think you'd want the same thing, somebody who's doing it day in and day out.
And you hate to say this, but you know, experience makes rules. Okay?
What do you mean by that? That's sort of interesting.
Well, we're really tight on how we do stuff. We have zero flexibility when it comes to package production, the way that homes are listed, the way they're marketed. We have zero flexibility when it comes to a buyer wanting to make a lesser than full price offer or, you know, not doing their inspection at time of binding. That's because we've seen all the danger. And every time we make a decision that is not followed by a rule that we've made, we take that seller closer to foreclosure. Okay? The bank doesn't care how you play this game, but the clock is ticking.
So I assume you've got more about this on your website, right?
Yes.
All right. RhondaDuffy.com for the blog?
Yes, RhondaDuffy.com.
All right. Sounds good. This has been Real Estate Insight. Rhonda, thanks so much.
Thanks. I'll see you next week.
You bet. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more in a moment on News Talk WSB. It's 11:36 on the Elise Glink Show. I have been tweeting out links to our new Real Estate Minute videos. They're so cool on our YouTube channel, my YouTube channel, youtube.com/expertrealestatetips. These Real Estate Minutes are awfully helpful. They're just a minute long. The one I just tweeted out is how to avoid foreclosure with a deed in lieu. Very helpful for folks in Atlanta and nationwide who are still facing some serious housing difficulties. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Follow me on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. We also, I should mention this, have some amazing tax information on the Equifax Finance blog, where our very own enrolled agent, Eva Rosenberg, also known as Tax Mama, has been putting up some great information, and I think Bill and Mary, you guys are going to start contributing to that as well, haven't you? Right?
That's right.
Right? So you'll be able to read Bill and Mary up on the blog at the Equifax Finance blog, blog.equifax.com, which is pretty cool as well. 404-872-0750 is our number. We are talking taxes today. Rebuilding America one tax house at a time, as it goes. Our experts today are Bill Nemeth and Mary Brody. They are both partners at Tax Audit Guardian. And I'll put up on the blog their information so you can find it. We also have Chet Burgess with us, another enrolled agent. He's a principal at Brookwood Tax Service. And we are taking your questions, so let's get back to it. Dennis joins us on the line from Woodstock. Dennis, welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to ask a question here.
Sure, go for it.
I have been dealing with Uncle IRS for 10 years with regards to a mistake that was made by filing taxes back in 98. A long story short is they claimed that I owed them $40,000, Over the years, I've been fighting with them, negotiating, got tax advocates involved, and it's now down to $25,000 because they admitted they made a mistake. Currently, I am on uncollectible status, and I really want this black cloud to be eliminated. And right now, I'm making I don't make enough to pay this $25,000 off. And I've heard these commercials, you know, 911 tax advocate, whatever it is, you know, we'll settle for pennies on a dollar. And I just want to find some way to eliminate what I owe and get them out of my life. And I just don't know what to do next.
I'd like to offer my thoughts on that. Bottom line is most of the people that are advertising for pennies on the dollar are not being candid and truthful. I have a lot of good luck if people have a terminal illness and they have 3 months to live. I've got 100% success rate on those offers. But typically, I will offer you another alternative. The IRS has a 10-year statute that they routinely obey, and after 10 years, the liability will drop off. Do you know when this liability is supposed to time out, Dennis?
It should be January of 14.
Okay, so if you can dance with them for another 10 months, you'll be home free. You'll get a nice letter saying the debt has timed out. You still are welcome to pay it, but you have no obligation to do so.
How does that work exactly? Because I can just hear everybody at home going, really? All I have to do is wait 8 months and, you know, 8 years and 4 months and it times out? How does that work?
Typically, the IRS has a 10-year collection statute. And a word that you can ask the IRS when you're talking to them is, what is the collection statute expiration date? CSED is what we say, and a number of my clients say that's their new favorite word, because if you can put off the inevitable, dance with the IRS, go into uncollectible, whatever, after 10 years, the federal debt will drop off of your personal return. And by being enrolled agents, we can, under disclosure authorization, go into a client's file, look it up, and actually do a little bit of planning for how to try to get them to that 10-year point without waking up the IRS.
Yeah.
What would restart that, Bill? What would restart the 10-year cycle all over again?
The IRS always has the ability of refreshing that, but typically they don't. It's one of those policy things. It's not codified. It's policy. And my opinion is you don't want to wake up a sleeping giant. I've got a guy that hasn't filed since the 90s. We just went through his one in February. It was kind of his Valentine's Day. And the next one we're holding our breath on is May. And he's probably going to make both of those, in spite of the fact he could write a check today to pay both of them off.
All right. Well, that's a different discussion that I don't want to get into.
Now, the IRS could go to court and reduce the debt to judgment. And then that, you know, would be permanent.
Doesn't happen
but
often.
But they don't
though.
Do that very often.
But watch out for the state. Every state has a different statute, and Georgia, for example, has no statute, which means that your debt to Georgia is due forever.
Yeah, they will renew the state lien every 7 years, and it'll just sit there on your record.
Dennis, do you have a Georgia, do you owe the Georgia Department of Revenue?
I do, and I am paying them off as we speak. It's just it's a paltry $58 a month. And probably by the end of the year, I'll have them out of my life.
Well, but, so it sounds by the end of the year, you could have them both out of your life.
Well, yeah, possibly. But
possibly.
Any success with any offers in compromise with the IRS?
How old are you?
57.
And what's your education?
Master's degree.
No hope.
None.
The IRS will still say potential future income that someone your age with your education could earn.
Okay, you're best off. I'm hearing them, Dennis, say you are best off holding your breath and not doing anything and just keep paying on Georgia. And hopefully by the time you call us back next year, this is all out of your life. And we'll see if that actually really happens. And if not, the IRS will still be there and so will we. So there you have it. 43 minutes past the hour. 404-872-0750. John joins us on the line from Jonesboro. John, how can we help you rebuild your tax house?
Well, yes, good morning, Elise, and to your guests, and thank you for taking my call.
All right.
But I had a rental property, had a house fire last year, and part of my insurance policy is that they covered the rent for about 6 months while the house was being rebuilt. And I'm wondering, do those payments count as rents received when I'm calculating to pay my taxes?
The short answer is the insurance policy was a deduction on your rental property. You paid for that insurance, deducted it on the rental property.
Mm-hmm.
And the payments for lost rent are included as rental income in the year you receive the payment.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But you can carve out just that portion. Obviously, the portion paid to rebuild the house is covered in a different fashion,
mm-hmm.
but the amount paid for lost rent is income.
Okay. Well, not exactly what I wanted to hear, but thank you so much.
I know.
You're welcome. Thank you, John. Sounds like church is starting. As we always say, drive time to church, and there are the church bells. 404-872-0750 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, One Tax House at a Time. 44 minutes past the hour. Steve joins us on the line from Ackworth. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Elise. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
What I have is, during 2012, I divorced and I also remarried in 2012. And part of my divorce settlement, the house was in my name. It was always, the mortgage was in my name. And I have an agreement that, you know, I continue to pay the mortgage and insurance and et cetera. And then she has the right to live there, you know, for up to 5 years rent free. So my question, I guess, is, how do I claim the interest and taxes on that house, since the house I currently live in with my current wife is in her name? So we have two separate properties.
That's a situation that's incident to divorce, and
right.
You're allowed to deduct the mortgage interest and the property taxes in that situation, just as if, you know, you were still in the house with your first wife. It's pretty straightforward under the provisions for divorce.
Do you own any rental or any vacation property?
No, I don't. I had sold that previously, so this was just, like I say, this is still, you know, the mm-hmm. house is, a mortgage is under my name. I just don't live in it right now.
Right.
Yeah, you're fine, especially when you've got a limited term agreement like that for 5 years.
Okay.
The rules for divorce allow you to continue, and your wife serves, your ex-wife still provides that living in the home part of a primary residence, even though you're physically no longer there. But under the divorce decree, you're allowed to assume you're still there, and you can deduct the interest and property taxes just as you did before.
That actually works out pretty well. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there wondering how you actually appear to live in two places with two different wives and not live in Utah. 404-872-0750. I was in Utah this year. It's a lovely place. John joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hey, John, how can we help you rebuild your tax house?
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Elise.
Sure.
I'm currently 63 and retired, and I just started drawing full Social Security last year, and I've just found out that for some reason or another you have to report part of the Social Security as income, and I don't know what amount you have to report, and it kind of sounds like a little double taxation there to me, but I'm wondering, will this amount, whatever percentage it is, go down in the future as I grow older, or will it stay the same? And is there, I just rent, I don't own anything. Is there anything I can do to lessen the amount that I have to report?
All right, so this is a good opportunity to just go through the quick rules on Social Security. Who wants to take this?
Well, I can start. Each year you calculate whether any part of your Social Security will be taxable, and the math is done on a worksheet. You take half of your Social Security benefits, add it to your other income, and if that exceeds your threshold based on your filing status, then some portion of the Social Security may be taxed, which means that it's not an easy thing to just say X amount will be taxed, but the maximum is only 80%. Only, I throw that word in, 85%, Bill corrected me. Social Security, the max is 85%. So there is a worksheet. It's calculated every year based on your income for that year, and some people are subject to it and some not. And, yeah, it does kind of seem like double taxation, but that's just the rule.
Can I confirm your age, John?
Yes, I'm 63 now, and I'll be 64 this year.
Okay. You have another benefit because of your age. You qualify for the Georgia retirement exclusion, so any money that of your Social Security that would be taxed at the federal level is not taxed at the Georgia level. So you're going to get a benefit there. In addition to which, if you have other retirement income, you're 62 and older, up to $35,000 of your other income will not be taxed at Georgia. Should you pick up a part-time job or whatever, $4,000 of that $35,000 of earned income would not be taxed as well.
That sounds good. I have stocks and things like that I did have to report that I understood.
And here's a little ballpark number you keep in mind. Are you single or married?
Single, yes.
Okay. So if that computation that Mary told you, taking half of your Social Security benefit and adding it to the rest of your income on page one of your 1040, mm-hmm. when that number goes above $34,001, 50% of your Social Security benefit becomes taxable. And if that number goes, or if it's over $25,000, rather, 50% is taxable. If it goes over $34,000, then up to 85% of your Social Security benefit will be taxed.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you a lot. Maybe I shouldn't have drawn it so early, but who knows.
And with the financial situation in Washington, we're pretty confident there's virtually no hope that the tax on Social Security benefits is ever going to decrease,
mm-hmm.
yeah, unfortunately.
No, not anytime soon, that's for sure. John, thank you so much for your call. It's 11:50 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time. Our number, 404-872-0750, or you can try our 800 number, which after that tax bill that John is facing, you might want us to pay for the call, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Follow me on Twitter. I'm tweeting out information about all of these great questions as we are going through them. Stay tuned. We'll be back to take more of your text questions next on News Talk WSB. 55 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Blank. We're doing an annual text show. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Chris joins us on the line. Chris, how can we help you? Chris?
Yeah, sorry about that. I had you on mute. Hey, good afternoon. I was calling, actually. I do have a tax question. In 2010, my accountant filed, and I didn't catch it, which I don't know why, but I just hate taxes, and claimed that I didn't make any income. And I did not pick that up. She's been doing my taxes for a good 6 years, and we make decent money. Went to go buy a house, and when we applied for the loan, they're like, hey, do you realize you didn't make any money in 2010? I'm like, okay, how could that be? Well, needless to say, we had to amend it, and now I'm stuck with a $15,000 X bill and then like five to Georgia. Was wondering what can be done. Is there any liability towards the accountant? How does that fall?
I guess a question, Chris. Did you provide her with all your income documents when you sat down to do the 2010?
Yeah, I mean, what happened was, yeah, we gave them, you know, obviously the gross, the net, all the expenses. And I think what happened is we have a lot of expenses for real estate, and we do get reimbursed, but she was taking that as an expense, and we were not getting reimbursed, so it zeroed out pretty much the income.
Okay. So is it likely to say that she did make a mistake?
Yeah, I would think so, yes.
Okay. Typically, tax pros have errors and omissions insurance, and everybody does it a little differently. You might ask her what her policy is when she makes an error. Is she going to pay penalties and interest? You know, how far is she going to go to help you? And everybody has a different answer.
Yeah, and I did ask that in email, and it just was never really answered because we also carry errors and omission. And mm-hmm. I know if I messed up, I would take the accountability for that.
And keep in mind, I think most tax professionals do agree on take the position that if you do owe the tax for your real income, the tax is your responsibility.
Right.
But
right.
if we make a mistake, potentially the if you get hit for additional cost, penalty, and interest because of a mistake, that would be your area of discussion.
Right, and then I guess also my issue, too, is then I was charged a pretty significant fee to amend the taxes and based on the mistake. And so I just wanted your insight on that. And when you guys were talking about not paying for 10 years, if I'm on a payment plan, that totally excludes it, right? I mean, you would have to not be paying in order to be...
No. The 10-year starts when the tax is assessed, and you may pay it down. But if you are able to get to that 10-year point, it will drop off.
Yes, there are partial payment installment
that don't
available.
Extend the statute.
That don't extend.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so it sounds like there's just, 2010. We're now in 2013, and, only 7 more years to go, Chris. 58 minutes past the hour. I can't believe we are recommending this on the show today. What have we sunk to? 58 minutes past the hour, rebuilding America one tax house at a time, starting with yours. 1-800-WSB-TALK if you have a tax question for our experts, enrolled agents Mary Brody, Bill Nemeth, and Chet Burgess. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be back with more in a moment on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. We are rebuilding America one house at a time, and this time, we're doing your tax house. This is our annual tax show. We've got with us in the studio Mary Brody, enrolled agent, partner at Tax Audit Guardian, Bill Nemeth, an enrolled agent, also a partner at Tax Audit Guardian, and Chet Burgess, also an enrolled agent, and a principal at Brookwood Tax Service. They are at your service today, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I am tweeting things out, so if you're not following me on Twitter, as always, you're missing at least half the conversation, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. I am also tweeting out some great tax information from my good friend, Tax Mama, Eva Rosenberg, also an enrolled agent. And you can find that at blog.equifax.com. So we have a whole bunch of people who would like to ask you guys some questions. So I think we're just going to dive right in. Mike joins us on the line from Lilburn. Mike, what's your tax question?
Hi, I'm recently retired. I'm getting my house paid down, and for the first time, my itemized deductions didn't quite get up to what I needed, the $11,900. And I noticed that, when you take the standard deduction on the federal, it says you have to take the standard in the state, and the state only gives you like $3,000. It's a much lower amount, so you got a big difference there. You really get hurt. Like $9,000 extra income at 6% is like a $500, $600 hit on the Georgia return. And I'm wondering, is it possible if you're just under the itemized deductions to not take the, even if it doesn't add up to the $11,900, to go ahead and take less on the federal?
Well, Mike, I think you hit the nail on the head. The rule is if you don't itemize for federal, then you cannot itemize for state. So you go back and look at how close were you when you itemized to that federal level? How close did you get to the 11,900?
It was around 11,500 this year, and of course it's going to be down every year.
Right. I would say probably for this year, if you do the math, absolutely take the itemized deductions on federal, even though they're not the maximum as far as getting to the standard deduction. You will make out so much better on Georgia because Georgia's tax is 6%, and you're going to lose so little by itemizing for federal. I would definitely do that.
That's Georgia's standard is so low. Is there any reason for that, or is it going to...
I don't know. Georgia hasn't adjusted much in the last... They did adjust... Bill, didn't they just recently adjust the personal exemption in Georgia?
For 2013, for married people, each married person gets another $1,000. But they didn't do anything with that standard deduction of $3,000. So typically when we have your situation, we run it both ways, and you look at your net refunds, and I think you're going to find that itemizing at the federal level is going to maximize your refunds in total.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Oh, don't forget there's a special little line on the federal return that you have to check that says you're opting to take itemized, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for your call. 1210 on the Elyse Glenk Show, 404-872-0750. Connie joins us on the line from Loganville. What's your tax question?
Hi, my name is Connie, and I just went ahead and did all my taxes, and I just received an email, and it came, it says that your Georgia individual income tax refund has been suspended, and I didn't know, you know, what this was about. I've never seen anything like this before, but it did state in here that they've implemented tighter security measures to protect Georgians from identity fraud, and what they wanted me to do is to go into their web page and take a verification quiz, you know, so that they can verify and release my refund. This, and then after they did that, you know, they told me I had to use this letter code number 2 to do that with. And I've never seen anything like this before. Is this something new that they're doing?
Sounds like anti-fraud measures have reached Georgia.
Interestingly enough, the IRS will tell you they will never communicate with you by email. Georgia violates that rule. They will communicate with you by email. The first time I had this 2 years ago, I thought it was fraudulent, so we got an old computer we didn't care about and very carefully went on the website and took the identity quiz. You know, they ask you where you've lived and all those kinds of things.
Like that's what this was.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's legitimate, believe it or not, but it doesn't look legitimate.
Oh, gosh, it's weird.
Well, you know, I felt the same way because I thought, well, gosh, I don't understand this, you know. And so it looks, you know, because of the web page and everything was, you know, gtc.dor.ga.gov. That's what I went to click on, like it said. And then after I did it, they sent me back a confirmation number and everything and said, you know, now that it's pending. But I was really concerned because I was.
You're right, Tamika. It would be so easy. It would be so easy to just fake that out. Connie, you're smart to be concerned, but it is legitimate. Why the state of Georgia persists in doing this, you know, we don't know, but there you have it, right?
Oh, thank you so much. That makes me feel so much better.
You're welcome. Glad to know you haven't been scammed today on the Elyse Glenk Show. 404-872-0750. Gene joins us on the line in Woodstock. Hey, Gene.
Hi.
Hey, what's your tax question?
Okay, I have the last of our children that has graduated from college this year.
Congratulations. It feels like you should get some sort of laurel yourself as they walk across the stage.
That too. Between what we paid towards her support versus what she has earned with her new job plus what she paid for her tuition via a loan, we still, I believe, qualify to claim her as a dependent on our tax return. The question is, who claims the $2,500 college credit, and or is that prorated because she only went for 6 months?
Okay. As long as the child, the daughter, did not pay more than 50% of her own support, you can continue to claim her as a dependent for 2012. And since she was in college as a full-time student 5 months or more, you're still eligible for the credit. The credit will follow the dependency exemption. So if you claim her as a dependent on your return, which it appears you can, then you can claim the credit. She cannot. Chances are you're probably in a higher tax bracket than she is. So for the family unit combined, the daughter and yourselves, it will probably benefit you more to claim the credit on your return than hers.
You know, that is correct.
That's kind of a general principle, not having seen the numbers on each of your returns.
And there's no proration.
No. No such thing as prorating.
And the other thing, if she were to claim the credit, she would not get the $2,500. She'd, because of her taxable income, she'd probably only get $1,000, and she'd be violating federal tax law because she's not eligible.
Okay. Well, we wouldn't want that.
Yes, we have the finest tax system money can buy.
Yeah, sounds like a great idea to me.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Gene. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Glad we're not skirting all tax laws today on the show. Stuart joins us on the line from Atlanta. You've got a question about selling gold, Stuart?
Right. My sister and I had sold some old gold rings that belonged to my mother. And it was for about $3,000 each at a rebuy gold jewelry store. We don't know if that was turned into the IRS, and if it wasn't, do we have to pay tax?
Interesting. I assumed you inherited those rings from your mother?
Well, they were just in the family. It wasn't in the will or in any legal documents. They were just in the family from the old business she was in. Or really my father was in the business, and they just devolved to her when the store closed.
All right, so store went to her, so the store closed, the property went to her, she died, and you received those.
Right.
Right. Okay, so that would have been, was there a will that just said everything that goes to you?
Yes.
Okay, so you inherited it, and now you've sold it. All right, let's turn it over to our tax experts. What do you think?
I think it's a pretty easy thought. If you had a gain on the sale, you should report the sale and report the gain. And you would calculate the gain based on the fair market value of the gold on the date you inherited it versus the sale price.
Well, we didn't exactly inherit it because it was just around the house. It wasn't ever in the document of any kind. But we have no idea what the purchase price was because it was bought for... to be resold in a store, and that was probably in...
Right, but Stuart, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
this
if
is
you
like
inherited,
real estate,
it's date of death. And
right.
Right.
When did your mom die, and when did you sell it?
1990.
Okay, oh. So you would look at the price of gold...
In 1990.
1990 was a long time ago, but you'd look at the price of gold in 1990, which might have been, I don't know, maybe it was $600 an ounce.
Yeah.
Versus when you sold it, which was probably like
$1,200 an ounce.
$1,500 an ounce. So if it was $3,000, it sounds like you probably made a gain of about $1,500 on each, roughly speaking, or maybe a little bit less. And then you could see, you know, whether or not that had an impact on your taxes. But really, what you're asking is, did they report the sale to the IRS along with your name and Social Security number, and is this going to come back to haunt you if you don't report it? And I think that's the real question we're asking.
Yeah, and they probably did not report the sale, but you should report the income on your tax return. Gold is considered a collectible, so the gain will be taxed at 28%. If the IRS, for any reason, should audit your return, one of the things they will do is ask for a complete printout of your bank statements for the entire year. So the money will show up on something they call a cash T, which an auditor always does.
Okay.
So we can't advise you professionally to take a position that the IRS probably isn't going to find out about the money. That's called playing the audit lottery, and ethically we can't do that as licensed tax professionals.
And Stuart, just think about this, right? So if it's really your gain is, let's say, $1,000, you're talking about a tax of $280, per ring. So out of a $3,000 that you and your sibling, or the two rings, $3,000 each, you're talking about $560 that you're going to pay to the IRS, and there may be some state as well, a very minor amount. You're still pocketing a whole bunch of change. So even if you did do this, unless my math is wrong, guys, is that right about what the...
Yeah, that's about right. And another principle to keep in mind is if you owe tax, it means you made money.
And that's a good thing.
You know, people who don't owe tax don't have that problem because in most cases they didn't make any money. Right. Which problem would you rather have? I made money or I didn't?
Listen, I'd be rather walking away with $5,540, and I'm sure you would as well. And so,
and you sleep better.
You sleep better, and you know what? Then you don't, in case you've made another mistake, this would get uncovered, and, you know, whatever, Stuart. But anyway, you'll do what you want. It doesn't sound like they're going to report you, but why risk it? It's a small amount of money. 20 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one tax house at a time on our tax show today. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We'll be back in a moment. We've got the WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. We're giving that away next, so stay tuned to News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Kling is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions, only on 95.5 FM at AM 750, News Talk WSB.
1224 on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. We're going to get back to your tax questions in just a moment, but it's time for the WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. The value is $135, and if you are a golfing fan, this is going to be the prize pack for you. It includes a pair of weekly admission badges to the Greater Gwinnett PGA Tour Championship, April 15th to the 21st at TPC Sugarloaf, and a $25 gift certificate to the Lakewood 400 Antique Market, March 15th to the 17th and coming. I was toying around with giving you a tax question today instead of just having the fifth caller do it, but it's too much work, so we're just going to have you be the fifth caller, and then you get to do this. So, prize pack line, 404-741-0750. We'll take the fifth caller. Be nice to Crystal. She is the one who's taking your call today. So I want to go back just for a minute before we start taking calls again. It seems as though there's a whole bunch of interesting stuff going on at the Georgia level. And I know, Bill, that you sent out this little memo at the top before we went on the air just to kind of cover some of that ground. And I thought this is a good time to just kind of cover it in a little bit more depth.
Okay, I'd love to. Thing I want to emphasize, Georgia legislature gave elders a nice present that is true for 2012 going forward. If you're 65 years or older and a Georgia resident, on the return, each person gets up to a $65,000 exclusion from income. If they're still working, $4,000 of that $65,000 is earned income. So that is a real boon to Georgia residents. The other thing, because the IRS changed their tax laws starting in 2013 for 12, Georgia did not adopt any of the last-minute changes, so when people are doing their return, they have to back out adjustments for educator expenses, tuition and fees expenses, the state and local sales tax if they happen to take that on their return, and if they are paying mortgage insurance premiums and itemized, they have to back that out of their Georgia return as well. Not all software does it automatically. And in fact, if we don't do it, we think the state of Georgia is going to have a massive letter writing campaign in about 6 months saying, your return is wrong, please send us additional money.
All right, sounds good. Anything else?
And businesses remember the bonus depreciation in Section 179. The Georgia limits did not conform to the federal 2012 as well, so they may have to back some of that out on a business return.
You know, it's kind of interesting when I think about sort of small businesses and taxes. One of the questions that I get offline quite a lot is, well, aren't small businesses already taxed to death, nearly taxed to death? You know, when you look at sort of small businesses, is it that people have this impression because nobody wants to pay any taxes, or if you have employees, like when I look at my business, we have 10 employees now, and I look at the amount of taxes that we pay for them, it's a huge amount. I could certainly afford to hire somebody else if I didn't have to pay all these taxes, but then, you know, there are a lot of services I get for that. What do you guys see in terms of small businesses and tax? Is it overbearing for most of your clients?
It is surprising to them. Many times they have to pay an intangible or a property tax every year to the local government on furniture and equipment that they've already purchased, paid tax on. They owned it for 10 years. It's still sitting in their office, and they have to pay a tax every single year to the local government. And that's on top of any other sales tax or other taxes that they've paid. It it's just surprising to them how many people are standing in line with their hand out for tax money.
It is amazing, and I do feel that as well. All right, we're going to get back to your questions in just a moment. Stay tuned. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Follow me on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Subscribe to the YouTube channel and check out all of our tax information at the Equifax Finance blog at blog.equifax.com. I'm Elise Glink. We're rebuilding America, one tax house at a time, and we'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB. 1236 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time. It's our tax show, and we are taking your tax questions. So the good news is that at the end of the show, you will still be able to reach out to our enrolled agent experts. By the way, an enrolled agent, for those of you who tweeted saying, what is an enrolled agent? It is somebody who is licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS. And so we have with us Mary Brody, an enrolled agent, partner at Tax Audit Guardian. Bill Nemeth, an enrolled agent, partner also at Tax Audit Guardian. And Chet Burgess, an enrolled agent, principal at Brookwood Tax Service. They've been on the show many, many times, and we're happy and delighted to have their expertise available for you. Let's go back to the phones. Beth joins us on the line. Hey, Beth, what's going on?
Hey, Elise, we really enjoy your show. We listen to you every Sunday.
Thank you. I'm so glad.
My mother is 80 years old. She purchased her home in 1975, and she's about to sell it for approximately $140,000. And we're just wondering if she will have to pay capital gains taxes.
Sounds like an easy question. Well, let me just ask a couple of things first while we're deciding who's going to answer this one. Does she have, I assume over the years she's improved the house?
I'm sorry, she's what?
Has she improved the house over the years? Did she renovate the kitchen? Did she put on a new roof?
No, she has not. We don't plan on making any improvements in order to sell it.
Okay, so it's just going to sell as is?
Correct.
Great. What did she pay for it?
$75,000.
All right. So there, and she, will she pay a real estate commission?
Yes, she will.
Okay. Doesn't sound like it's too unusual, but the good news is that she shouldn't owe a dime.
Okay.
So, Bill, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like this falls well within the $250,000 in profit tax-free that you get to keep on your primary residence.
Yeah, absolutely. And bottom line is it doesn't even show up on most tax returns. If you look at your software, you wouldn't even see an entry on your Schedule D subject to the Section 121 exclusion of $250,000. So good for her. She gets to keep all the money.
Great. Would she have to file a long form next year then?
No.
No, uh-uh.
Okay, wonderful.
So even easier.
Yes, getting easier, absolutely. Thank you so much for your help.
Oh, you're welcome, and congratulations to your mom. That's a nice call. Wow. 38 minutes past the hour, no tax bill due. 404-872-0750. Richard joins us on the line from Columbia, Missouri. Richard, what's your tax question?
It's about my daughter. She's got a Sallie Mae loan for her degree that she got last year. And when she checked into her account, she had an email notice to check her account. There were two things in there showing 2011 and 2012 interest that she paid. And it says in the tax book that she can take that interest off of her when she files this year.
All right.
She take 11 and 12?
I'll jump in there. I was almost going to let Elise answer it because she did so well on the last question. We're going to make her an honorary enrolled agent here any moment. She did fabulous. But on the student loans, unfortunately, you're limited to deducting the interest paid during that year. So she can't double up and take all of it in one year.
Well, why did it tell them there were two forms on there and to print them out?
Well, likely she was eligible in 2011 and in 2012.
Yeah, she just didn't.
And just didn't do it.
Is it worth Is it worth restating it, Mary? Should she go back and redo her tax return?
I think someone should look at it to see if it's worth it. It all depends on how much interest.
It's only $100 and something.
Yeah, probably not, unless she wants just the wonderful opportunity to discover the amended tax return forms all by herself, because a professional would probably charge her more than she'd get back. Yeah.
All right, so Richard, that's probably not going to work out for her.
How can a person find out if a state taxes your pension?
I'm
retired.
You're in Missouri and you want to know if the state of Missouri will tax your pension?
Yeah.
The state tax as opposed to federal tax.
Right.
I would recommend calling a Missouri enrolled agent. They just Google Missouri or enrolled agents, or check with the NAEA, the National Association of Enrolled Agents. Mm-hmm. Just find somebody local who's familiar with your state law, preferably an enrolled agent, and I'm sure they could answer you immediately.
And your other option might be to go to the state,
website
so and look at the instructions for the
If you're federal, though, you have to show I'm drawing Social Security, too. I take half of my Social Security. I'm paying taxes on it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that normal? When I first signed up, I took 10% out for taxes.
Yes, sir, it is. If you're 50% of your Social Security plus your other income exceeds certain limits, then either half of your Social Security or 85% of your Social Security will be subject to federal tax. And there's a worksheet in the tax return that calculates that for you.
All righty. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Richard, for your call. We appreciate it. 42 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show, 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with our calls. Christine joins us on the line from Stone Mountain. Christine, what's your tax question?
Hi, Elyse. How are you today?
It's a good Sunday, although I'm sorry we're costing people a lot of money with this show. Maybe we can save some for you.
I hope you can. Elyse, I am the administrator to my brother's estate.
Okay.
And he passed away without a will. There were certain assets that were left with beneficiaries, but we're in the process of closing up the estate bank account probably within the next 3 to 4 months. And there will probably be monies to the extent of $300,000 left over. My mom and I, we are a very small family, and we plan on making a couple of distributions, probably 4 distributions out of the account. And I wanted to know if that was are those considered taxable events?
To the people that you're giving it to?
Yes, one of them will be my mom, of course. I would like to pay off her home. I have 2 children that I would like to get started on some sort of an investment track. And my brother also had a friend that we would like to make a distribution to a charity for her and a personal distribution to someone else.
All right, Chet, you were going to jump in.
Yeah, I'll field that one. First of all, there was no will, so... Have you consulted with an attorney regarding the intestacy laws of the state to make sure that you're administering the estate in compliance with the state law and that you're making distributions in compliance with state law? If you don't file a will, if there's no will for the deceased, then the laws of the state specify who is entitled to your brother's property.
Okay, and we have an attorney. It happened in New York.
Okay.
And according to the succession in New York, it's my mom first, and then it would be me. I'm his only sibling.
Okay. So as long as you're consulting with the attorney when you're making distributions, that's going to be rule number one. I'm not an attorney, but I've done several estate taxes, and you've got to follow the New York rules for intestacy. So distributions are not optional for the administrator to beneficiaries. You must follow the rules.
Okay.
So, like, if you talked about this person that someone would like to make a gift to, it may be that the estate will have to make a distribution to your mom and to you from the estate funds, and then one of you, your mother or you, will need to make this gift to this third party. When it comes to charitable beneficiaries, there's another rule in the federal tax code. In order to be deductible on the estate tax return, the charitable gift must be specified in a will. So again, you need to ask the attorney in New York, since there is no will, do you potentially run into trouble with trying to get a charitable deduction out of it if you make the distribution from the estate funds? Whereas if you distribute the ratios to your mother and you under the New York law, then your mother or you potentially could make that charitable contribution and be able to deduct it. You will need to file a Form 1041, a federal estate income tax return, if the estate had $600 or more of income in any single calendar year or fiscal year. When did your brother die?
2012.
Okay, so you're going to try to wrap it up within a year. But if there were income of more than $600 generated by any of the estate assets, bank accounts, brokerage accounts, that sort of thing, you will need to prepare and file a Form 1041 for the estate.
I do have an accountant already who's preparing one for 2012.
Excellent, excellent.
So what I hear you saying is a distribution to my mom and myself, would that be taxable if that were
no.
the rules of succession?
No.
Oh, it would not be taxed.
Yeah. Distributions to beneficiaries named in a state, either a will or under the state rules of intestacy, are not taxable to the beneficiary. You may have some income in respect of the decedent that could be taxable to you, which the accountant will take into consideration when the 1041 is prepared, and you and your mom should receive a Schedule K-1 from that account. From that estate income tax return, and if there is any income on those assets that is distributed out to you, the income only would be taxable. Let's say there was a bank account that had $1,000 interest.
Right.
The principal in the bank account would come to you tax-free, but you would have to pay tax on the $1,000 of interest.
Okay.
Christine,
there's
one other just thing to think about, and again, the attorney, and I think Chet is giving you great advice. The attorney is the one to ask this question of. If your mother is supposed to receive all of the money, like in some states, she would get 50% and you as the remaining sibling would get 50%. And if there were any children, it would be parent and child might split 50% and you would get after that. So it sounds like you don't have any nieces or nephews, correct?
That is correct, yes.
So you just want to make sure that when you're paying out, that your mother doesn't need to get all $300,000 and then make bequests to everybody else. And if that is the case, right, where she would have to get it all instead of you and she each getting half, ask the attorney if she can then refuse part of the inheritance, which would then fall to you. And the reason I say this is because what you don't want to have happen, and I don't think Chet talked about this, is that if your mother is supposed to get it all and you take half, it could be seen that your mother gave you half.
Right.
Right, which would then pose a problem for her own future will and inheritance plans, and you don't want to run into that situation either down the line. So you need to just be very careful about how you distribute the $300,000 and see what happens. But it sounds like it's not even near the amount that would start to be taxed, so from a tax point of view, maybe not. Again, I'm playing the tax person here.
Right, and what Elisa's talking about is called a disclaimer.
Okay.
Your mother can disclaim part of the funds that she would be entitled to under law in favor of another beneficiary down the line, such as you.
Okay. We've already had a disclaimer because, again, in New York, the succession is my mother is the next in line, and there was a lot of legal paperwork that, you know, my mother's up in age that she could not handle. So she did sign a waiver at that point, waiving her rights and making me the administrator. So I guess you're speaking...
No, that's not the disclaimer. The disclaimer is a document in which she would disclaim her right to all of the $300,000 and say a portion of it could go to the next heir down
okay,
the line,
okay,
according to
I
the
understand.
Law.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what I'm trying to do is, your mother's obviously up in age, and let me just say from all of us that this sounds like a really horrible tragedy that came probably surprised everybody.
It did, yeah.
And so, you know, we are deeply sorry, and I am deeply sorry that you have to go through this. And I have just spent, if you've listened to the show at all, you know that I just spent a couple of Saturdays ago, spent all of almost several hours on a Saturday with some family friends as they watched their sibling
in ICU, and ultimately, you know, he is just languished now in a state that's just awful, and you'd like it to be...
It's awful, yeah.
It's awful, yeah. And so I'm so deeply sorry that you have to go through this, and I just... There's been so much already, and kudos to you for trying to get this all wrapped up in a year. But I just want you to make sure you aren't causing yourself or your mother any potential problems down the line, since I assume that you are now your mom's sole heir, you and your children.
And right, we are. Mm-hmm.
And you want to make sure that that all goes smoothly, too. So I'm sure your first order of business after this happened was to make sure she had a will and whatever else she needed.
Yeah.
And this is something you just want to take care of now so that you don't run into these kinds of bigger problems down the line, and since it'll sounds like it's going to all fall to you again, and so I wish you strength for this, because you're going to need it.
It's a lot of work. I, if anyone had ever told me, I would have not believed them, but it's like another job, really.
It is, and you're not even local, and so when you're out of state, it's even worse.
Yeah.
And
it's
and
even worse.
You
yeah.
have to have
yeah.
an attorney, and New York is very problematic. But you know what? So is Georgia. So anyway, deep breath. You're almost there. Just make sure you ask these really smart questions, and Chet has given you great advice, and
yes,
we wish you well.
Thank you all so much.
You're welcome. Let us know what happens, okay? It's 51 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours here on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com and midday every Sunday with Elise Kling on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
12:55 on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours. Here on News Talk WSB, it's been a great show. We have our tax experts with us. We want to just take another call before the end of the show, always trying to get right up until the edge when everybody's saying, get off, next show's starting. Ray joins us on the line from Powder Springs. Hey, Ray.
Good morning, Lee. I'm 70 years old, took my Social Security at 67. I don't have a job. Do I have to file income tax?
If Social Security is your only source of income,
yes,
no, ma'am. No. There's no way any part of that would be taxed.
Okay. That's it.
Wow. Easy question. And,
I just wanted to file or not. How about the state?
No. Social Security is never taxed at the state of Georgia level.
Okay. Well, thank you. Enjoy your program.
All right. Thanks for calling in. Well, see, we were able to help a whole bunch of people today. Wow. We just have a couple of minutes left. You know, why don't we go around the table and just last thoughts, what you might want to share with somebody. Bill, you want to start off?
We did want to make people aware that going into 2013, we have the AMT has been fixed permanently, and we put permanently in parentheses because they can always change it, but we don't have to hold our breath in December every year waiting for the AMT adjustment, and AMT is now adjusted for inflation, so they actually did what they should have done about 45 years ago. We're so pleased.
What is the level now for the AMT, do you think?
For 2012, for married filing jointly, it's $78,750. So it's a nice bump up.
Yeah, that is a nice bump up.
Yeah.
So that should eliminate the problem for the vast majority of, you know.
Absolutely. The $30 million that would have fallen into AMT this year if they didn't change it.
Right. I think I still fall in there. But anyway.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I know. Always a special case over here at the Glink household. Chet, what about you?
Be aware of a couple of Social Security issues affecting 2013. One, the 2 percentage point reduction that applied for the previous couple of years as part of the stimulus effort, you know, was not renewed. So everybody's Social Security withholding is going up 2 percentage points, which means, you know, if you make $50,000 a year, that's going to be an extra $1,000 coming out of your paycheck. And one extra wrinkle for individuals who earn $200,000, couples at $250,000, there's an extra 0.9% Medicare tax that takes effect on any earned income above the $200,000 or $250,000 level, and you will pay it on your tax return next year in most cases. The real problem will come with couples, two-job couples, who neither of whom earn $200,000, but together they're over $250,000. They're going to have no withholding, and it'll turn up on their tax return. Employers are supposed to withhold the extra 0.9% when you're when your wages hit $200,000 any given year. But that two-job couple could be a problem area. They could be surprised.
But how would you get to two? Each one earns $200,000, and then they have to be over $250. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you
right.
can do that.
Each earns $150. Their gross is $300. They'll have $50,000 subject to that extra, almost a percentage point. They'll owe an extra almost $500 on the.
Okay. Sounds
good. Tax return.
Right. Mary, quickly, anything?
Quickly, when you're doing your taxes this year, don't forget if you did a Roth conversion in 2010. You have to add the final portion of it to your 2012 tax return. They did away with the line on Form 8606, so you just have to plunk it down in the middle of your tax return.
All right. Thanks so much to our panel, Bill, Mary, and Chet. We'll put all of their contact information up on the thinklink.com blog. In the meantime, music's playing. Gotta go. Have a great week. I'll be back next week on News Talk WSB.